This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for June 17th, episode 1192, brought to you today by Back on Track Products. Good morning, Horse World.
Guess what day it is, huh? Anybody?
Julie, hey, guess what day it is?
Oh, come on, I know you can hear me. Mike, what day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Wednesday.
Hit it!
That's right, it's hump day with your Horses in the Morning hosts, Jamie, that girl Jennings, and Glenn, the geeky pony guy.
Wednesday, I can't sleep.
Hey, guess what, Jamie?
What?
I was looking at flights yesterday. We're going to come out to see you.
Really?
Yes, we're going to come out and say hi, finally, after, what, 5 years now? We're going to come out and visit you in Phoenix, but we're not doing it till the end of October when I noticed that the average temperature gets down below 100.
Did you already buy your flight?
No, we didn't buy it. Yeah, but I need to coordinate some dates with you, but I was looking.
I was going to say, well, I'm not going to be here. Sorry. Sorry, I'm out of town. When are you coming? Yeah, I'm gone then.
For 5 years, for those that are regular listeners know, Jamie's been busting my chops, Jennifer and I's chops both, for 5 years about coming out, and we haven't yet. So we're going to do that.
All right. Sounds exciting. I'll have the baby's room ready. You can sleep in the crib.
And I also booked the donkey ride down the Grand Canyon for us all. So,
oh, Lord have mercy. I bet you're going to enjoy that by yourself because I'm not doing that again.
Bunch of wimpy horse girls. I don't think I'll be doing that one either, to be honest with you.
Actually, if you want to get them on as a guest, my friend is a veterinarian for that group of mules, and she would be more than happy to come on and really sell you on it.
Well, you know, the guy was on, years ago? Probably 3 or 4 years ago, that runs that concession and said that they've never had anybody die.
I'm sure they probably their lawyers tell them that, but I'm pretty sure half of them never come back.
It's just like a Bermuda Triangle of the Grand Canyon.
No, it was really beautiful and it was really amazing. I did it when I was 19 and young. And if you recall, I think I told you the story then, was I went right behind the guide. They put me second. And I rode to the bottom and I rode all the way back up. And I was exhausted. And I was riding, I was 19, I was riding like 6-8 horses a day. I should be really in really good shape for this. But it's so tense, and you're just on the very edge of these switchbacks, and the wall to your right, and a long drop off. And I, afterwards, I see all these people that had been on our ride. They hop off, they're all like laughing and talking, and I'm exhausted. And I said to the guide, I said, let me ask you this. Why are all these like white folk over here that have never sat on a horse? They're all totally fine, and I'm exhausted. And he looked at me and he goes, because you know what can happen. It's like, oh my God.
You don't have to ride back up, do you? Do they get you up some other way?
Oh, no. I did the all-day ride. I went all in. I mean, we might as well have camped out down there and ridden the next day all the way out. It is a long, exhausting day. I can't believe these people, these guides do it every day. They're crazy.
Now, were you so terrified that you didn't notice the scenery? Or, you know, after a while, you just tune out?
I got to tell you that I remember a couple spots, but I don't really remember the scenery at all, thinking about it. I remember watching the horse in front of me, the mule in front of me. That's it, though. But you know what? I'm sure there's a lot of listeners that would really love that or have done it. Maybe we ask that on our Facebook page. Has anybody done the mule ride to the Grand Canyon?
We should get that guy on again. It really has been years since we talked to him. We should get him back on. Then we can ask him the question, so what's your safety record now?
Yeah. And their lawyers are going to tell you that nobody has died.
Nobody's died. It doesn't tell you how many people they've carted out in stretchers, but nobody's died. And, nobody's you know, died. They do take, from what we heard and what you said, they take very good care of the animals. And
they do. Yeah. They do. I mean, they have to. Those guys have to be fit and in good shape and steady. And I think the mule that I rode was about 12 hands tall. They're like, oh, tiny, short person. Let's give her the short, tiny tiny mule. It was a night. I think my feet were dragging.
Now, would you rather go down on that donkey or mule, or would you rather walk yourself?
You know what I would like to do? They have this really new thing on the North Rim where it's a glass walk that you can skywalk, I think it's called, and you can walk out and there's nothing but below you. And I think it's only like, I don't know, $1 million to walk out on it. So I would like to do that.
You know what I did from, I've talked about this before too. One of the best ways to see it, in my opinion, was I took a helicopter from Vegas and we flew down and we flew into the canyon. We actually had breakfast down there. They set up a breakfast. And then we flew around in the canyon and flew back out. And I think you can only do that in the north anymore, Indian territory, because they don't allow it. They don't allow the planes, I think, to get down in the canyon anymore in the south part. So,
well, because more people died doing that than they did in the dang mules.
But I'll tell you what,
the way to do it is the way Chad does it, which is they zip around in those F-16s through the canyon. I think that sounds like the way to do it.
It's like a video game we used to play.
Yeah. It's like that Star Wars thing where they're trying to kill the Death Star.
By the way, I crashed a lot in that video game. So I think I'm going to be.
Yeah, you're not fine.
No, I'm not doing it. Jennifer, what is on today's show? About horses.
Horse on today's Back on Track. Woohoo! 3 days until the weekend, Wednesday edition. We'll do a little celebrity thoroughbred memorabilia shopping with the CKR Central Kentucky Riding for Hope.
There you go.
Charity auction. I'll just say the whole thing. And then next up, Dr. Tom Vitti. I hope I got that right, Dr. Tom, is going to put the jockey's position to the scientific test with some work they're doing over in London. And Horse and Country TV's Velvet Voice, Victoria Spicer, has the latest on the European report. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
We are an international show today.
Yeah, we are. Wow.
My daily Winnie goes out to Lisa Marie Kelly, Ice Road Trucker Lisa Marie Kelly, and her pony Rocky. And I posted, if you haven't had a chance to watch it, go to our Facebook page and scroll down a couple, and you'll see the little video that she sent me last night. She texted it to me on my phone, and I asked her permission to use it. It's of her little pony Rocky in the house, by the way. And you're going to see that she has taught this little pony tricks, and it does something that not many ponies will do successfully. So you want to take a look at the video. It's the cutest thing. Did you watch it?
Yes, I did watch it. And I think that the adorableness is definitely high. But the fact that it's picking up things and clearing I just see it clearing the countertops and making my house more of a mess.
I asked her why the pony was in the house, and she said, well, her other horse stepped on her foot yesterday, and she was hobbling around, so she brought the pony in to help her. So that's why the pony was in the house. You know,
it's a therapy pony.
That's right. She lives in Alaska. You know, they do fun stuff up there. So anyway, the question of the day, Jennifer, is have you ever brought your horse or pony in the house and why? And I think I remember Jennifer brought my pony in the house when I had pneumonia one time, and I was really, really sick. And I was on the couch and couldn't get off the couch. And I hadn't seen my pony in like a week. Didn't you bring the pony into the house? That's what I kind of remember in my sickness fog.
Yes. We brought Piper into the house.
I thought so. Right into the kitchen. Now, it was about a 13-hand pony, so...
Stop that.
Yeah, and Piper would go anywhere. She didn't care.
She plodded right in there, no problems, no worries.
Now, I think that... this video is pretty small. Was Lisa's pony wearing little booties?
It looked to me like he had little boots on.
Yeah,
little
it
red
did.
Boots.
It did look like he had little boots on. So at least she's taking care of her wooden floor.
Very muddy in Alaska,
floor.
You know.
Yeah, that's right.
He had little mud boots on.
Yep. I wonder if it's potty trained. That was my first question when I watched the video.
I distinctly remember one time we brought one of our calves into the house as kids, and the first thing that little cow did was pee on the floor. Yep. First thing first.
Pee's worse.
Sounds like my kid.
Yeah.
So have you ever brought a horse or pony into the house, Jamie?
Well, I was listening to you tell that story, and the irony is thick because I brought a pony into the house. It was a Shetland pony, and we had a back deck that had all these stairs, and that was meant to, you know, keep the horses at bay. Well, my Shetland pony, also named Piper,
really?
would climb. I had two of them. I had Peter and Piper. That's what you do when you're, you know, nine. And Piper would always walk up the stairs and walk around on the deck. And I just thought, well, no better time than the present to have a pony in the house. And Mom was gone. So I think Mom was in the basement or something. And so I took her up into the house and took her in the kitchen and gave her a treat. So really solidifying that get in the house because there's food here. But again, that's what you do when you're nine. Not like Jennifer, who brought a pony in the house for a grown ass man.
It was cute, though. Made my day. I was very happy after that. I literally did not leave the house for 3 weeks that time. Pneumonia is not any fun.
No.
Well, all right, your turn.
Well, I would like to give my daily Winnie is one of these.
Happy birthday.
Wow, that is a really scary Winnie. Happy birthday.
It's a pony Winnie.
That's one of the Winnies that, like, the horse is in trouble.
Yes.
And he's, like, freaked out. So we need to work on the Winnie in that one because you just scared poor Robin Donahue half to death. My God. But happy birthday to Robin. She's a listener, longtime listener. And I just wanted to wish her happy birthday.
There you go. Happy birthday, Robin, who is currently not banned. From the show, I think.
Not this moment, no.
I think she's okay. All right, so I have a follow-up to a story. I don't know when we did this, last Friday or Monday. I forget, they all run together. But this topic, remember, of General George Patton came up. And something in an article or somewhere that he had been in the Olympics, and we weren't quite sure what that was for. Well, I looked it up and did some research, and this is the scoop. So General Patton, early on, in like 1910, joined the Army. Well, in the 1912 Olympics, they decided to bring the pentathlon back. It hadn't been since, like, ancient Greek times that they had the pentathlon. So this was the first pentathlon in the Olympics, in the modern-day Olympics, and it was in Stockholm, Sweden, and 42 competitors competed, and they were all military. This was all military competitors. They were all officers in different military. Well, the United States Army sent General Patton, or he wasn't a general then, but sent Patton at that point. And the competitions they had in 1912 consisted of rapid-fire pistol shooting, fencing, a 300-meter swim, a cross-country steeplechase on horseback, and a 4,000-meter cross-country run. So that was what they did. Well, there was, of course, it was Patton, so there had to be a little bit of controversy, right? In the shooting, all the competitors were using .22 caliber firearms, and anybody that knows anything about weapons knows .22 is pretty small bullets. Okay. That's what most people use for target shooting is .22s. So that's what we use for target shooting. I have a .22, and we have a .22 rifle and pistol. And the other reason was it used to be that .22 ammunition was really cheap. You could buy it at Walmart for, you know, $1,000 for $3. Not anymore.
I don't think Patton was shopping at Walmart, but
no.
Go ahead.
No, but I mean, that's what everybody used for target shooting. Patton was not happy with that, and he thought it was demeaning as an Army officer to use a .22. He was going to use his .38 caliber pistol that he was issued by the Army, which is a much bigger bullet. Well, what happened was when he shot his shots, out of the 10 shots, they could account for 7 because the thing just ripped the shreds out of the target. The paper target. So when they went up to check it, they could only find evidence of 7 shots. Well, he claimed that it's because the bullets were going through the other bullet holes. because it ripped the shreds out of the target. And it could have been that was the truth. I mean, that will happen. But they could find no evidence of that, so they only credited him with 7. Well, as it turned out, he ended up 5th after all of this. And they said he probably would have won had the other 3 bullets hit the target. And had he used the .22, they probably could have accounted for the other bullets. So he shot himself in the foot, literally. So, Patton apparently had been a troublemaker and a rabble rouser since the beginning.
That is super interesting. Thanks for that history lesson. We talked about Patton because Alois Podhalski, there was a story about saving the Lipizzans.
Oh, that's right. And he was involved in that. Yes, in World War II. Yep.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Yep. And we have a picture. Jennifer will post it on Facebook. Jennifer, if you see the picture in the show notes, if you don't, I'll post it. But of him on a steeplechase horse in 1914. The steeplechase's horse name was Woltex. And by the way, you could really see the ribs on this horse. I mean, he needed some vittles.
He was fit. He was fit.
Very fit. Very fit. But yep, so he probably would have won a medal had he not been so ornery and wanted to use his .38 instead of the .22 was what it came down to.
Ornery.
Yep.
Signature.
All right, let's go to our first guest. This is so exciting. We love having her on. And we're going to be talking about a fun event that is happening right now that you can take part in. And it involves some very famous racehorses. And we have Pat Klein, Executive Director of Central Kentucky Riding for Hope. Hi, Pat.
Hi, good morning.
Welcome back to the show. It's always fun to have you on. And you guys have another one of your fun auctions going on. Tell us about it.
Well, we do. This Saturday is our signature fundraising event called Night of the Stars. And that is our main, you know, fundraiser for the year. It's held out at Keeneland. It is, you know, a typical live and silent auction, but it is also a rather unique event because for the live auction portion of the evening, you know, that the auction includes 8 of our therapy horses that have been costumed by a wonderful gal named Shirley Gentry, who makes all these costumes. And, you know, they, along with their rider from our riding program, are auctioned off as a sponsorship opportunity, you know, for the year. So it's kind of fun. Our theme this year is Dancing with the Stars. So the horses will all be dressed as some kind of a dance from the current TV show.
Oh, really?
Nice.
It's going to have salsa so, horses.
You know, a horse in a tutu or a hip-hop costume or something like that.
I can see him doing
really
the salsa
fun.
Now.
There
now,
you go.
Tell us about some of the halters and who they were.
Well, one of the things that we do have in our Starlight section of our auction are a wonderful collection of halters that are worn by famous stallions that, you know, are on the farms here surrounding Lexington. Many of those horse farms have just been so supportive of us this year and donated halters. And, you know, if you're a collector, this is where you want to be. If you're a collector of halters, I think we've got some really a really good selection, and we just appreciate the generosity of the horse farms that help us.
Well, and of course, let's name some of them because our audience will know them. We have halters from Windstar Farm, Pioneer of the Nile, Ring a Bell, Super Saver, Tis Now.
You know, I think Pioneer of the Nile is going to be a very hot halter with American Pharaoh, of course, the winner of the Triple Crown, and he being the sire.
Don't tell anybody. I was going to bid on that one.
Right now. No, actually, we're very excited. Very excited to have that because when the halter was donated to us, you know, it was before American Pharaoh won the Triple Crown. So we just feel grateful that we have this.
Did they ask for it back after he won the Triple Crown? Give us our
halter
back.
No.
Okay.
No, they didn't. So we have it, and I think that's going to be very popular. We also have another very popular halter this year is the Galileo halter, you know, acknowledged by most horsemen as being the leading sire in the world. Champion sire 2008, 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013, and 14. So he is, he's a premier stallion to, if you're a collector, it doesn't get much better. Galileo stands, as you know, in Coolmore in Ireland. So we feel as far as we know, we have the only one on this side of the pond that's been through an auction.
Wow. And you have Orb, Warfront, you have a Fleet Alex, Bernardini. You know, you have some
A Fleet Alex. We have an Alpha Halter that was given to us by Darley. We have Bernardini. We have Birdsong from Gainesway Farm, Candy Ride from Lane's End. Ashford gave us Declaration of War. Three Chimneys has given us Exchange Rate.
You've done this before, right? Do I remember that correct? And what do they usually go for?
Well, we've never really had this many of very famous halters, but we always do have one or two, and they sell very well. We've sold, and I'm not going to remember exactly, but Stormbird, Stormcat many years ago for several thousand dollars, and they're very collectible halters. And the nice thing about them is that they all come to us with a letter on the farm stationery signed by their management that indicates that, the horse has, actually worn the halter at their farm. So it does have a letter or a certificate of authenticity if that's, what you need to feel, secure in the donation. But then we have a Kitten's Joy halter from Ramsey Farm, Malibu Moon, an Orb halter, Scat Daddy, Sky Mesa Halter, Super Saver, wonderful Kentucky Derby winner. Again, that was donated by Windstar. And, of course, Tiz now, winner of the Breeders' Cup Classic twice. So, if you have, it doesn't get a whole lot better than that. We have an Untappable Halter that came to us from Winchell Farm. And we have a Warfront from Claiborne, and Take Charge.
I have a question because I lived in Kentucky for a long time and now live out in Phoenix, Arizona. And one of the things I miss the most about living in the bluegrass was my severe addiction to Ale 8, which is a ginger drink. And you guys have an Ale 8 gift basket. It's got the sauces and salsas and Ale 8s. And
the heck with horse halters. She went right to the alcohol.
If you want to talk alcohol, we do have a bottle of Pappy Van Winkle, 23 years old.
Yeah, well, that's next. But can you ship the Ale 8 package to Phoenix? Is that possible?
Well, I don't know. There would be that cost of shipping because that would be kind of an expensive thing and a weighty thing to ship. And of course, you can't ship really alcohol. So, we will have to work out something. Hopefully the person that buys that is local and can pick it up later.
I wanted it to be me. And Ale 8 does not have alcohol in it, you guys.
It doesn't?
No, it does not. And they donated.
I thought it was beer.
No.
No, Ale 8's a soft drink.
I didn't know that.
You can only find it in Lexington.
Yes.
Apparently, that's the story correct. Goes in my family that my father was told when he was very young and had just started kind of working that there's a new soft drink that's going to sweep the nation. And my father invested an awful lot of money in this drink called Ale 8-1. And he lost all of his money. So because
well,
it never got out of
manufactured, so.
I know.
We should buy the Day at the Races. It's Enjoy a Day at the Races at 2015 Keeneland Fall Meet. Includes a corporate box, 15 passes, 2 parking spaces. I mean, that's cool.
I'll go in on it.
It is, and I believe that one comes with a tour of Darley, does it not?
Oh, I didn't even get that far.
There's wonderful races. There's a great skybox. At Churchill Downs too, that's available, and that's one of those really nice, located right on the finish line. If you need to do some corporate entertaining, this is that's definitely the way to go and buy something like that.
We have such a wide
variety of things in our live auction. Of course, we have our 8 horses dressed up in costumes, but we also have 5 significant. Non-horse items in the auction too, such as a Holiday Weekend Veil. That's one of the things that's really available Christmas or New Year's in Old Vale. So it's kind of really a pretty little area to be in, lots of twinkle lights and would be a wonderful trip. The second thing we have is a great Shaker Village progressive dinner where you travel within Shaker Village for your appetizer, and then by horse-drawn wagon, you travel to the next stop, which would be the entree. And
I didn't know they did that. Must be something new. They weren't doing that when we lived there. I love Shaker Village.
Well, and this includes an overnight stay and breakfast the next morning. So that's going to be a very nice auction item. We also have a wonderful home that someone gave to us out in Montana in Paradise Valley. It's very very accessible to Yellowstone National Park and has opportunities for fly fishing and hiking. And then, of course, we've got our Battle of Pappy Van Winkle. And we also have a great portrait experience from a well-known photographer in Lexington named Mark Kidd. And those are just wonderful pictures, and that he'll come out to your house and do your children or your pets, including horses. So that's a great package. And then the last thing we have in our live action is something that we call Around Rupp Arena, which is our attempt to collect a season's worth of home basketball games to see the Cats play at Rupp. So that's pretty exciting. You know, in Kentucky, we love our basketball.
Yeah, they bleed blue, they say. I'm looking at the prints and the beautiful triple crown print of Easy Goer and Sunday Silence. I've already registered a bid, so.
Oh, good. And bidding is so easy. You know, we have a website, which is www.c as in Central, K as in Kentucky, R as in Ride, and H as in hope.org. And if you go on our website, www.ckrh.org, you can just click on the homepage, and, you know, it's really the easiest thing to sign up for bidding. It's all text bidding, so you don't have to be present to win. And it's great. I love it. So far, I've been trying it out myself. And, you know, then it sends you a text and says, you have the winning bid on your cell phone. And then it'll tell you... a little bit later, it'll send you back. It'll send you a message that says, "You have been outbid. Would you like to bid again?"
Yes, please.
So it's fun.
So tell us about your organization, Riding for Hope.
Okay, we are a 34-year-old nonprofit. We have been located since our inception, really, out at the Kentucky Horse Park. And so we started off here in a very, very small way with just one or two clients and some borrowed horses. And through the 34 years have passed, you know, the services have just grown and expanded. Probably about 3 years ago, a little longer than that, we were given on a 99-year lease a section of land inside of the horse park. And you know, we had to build our own building on this land, but it is a great location for us. We finished our building project. So, you know, we are a provider of equine-assisted activities and therapies to individuals with special needs. And that can be physical disabilities, cognitive disabilities, social-emotional disabilities. So our programming is very, very diverse in the services that we provide. But everything has the common denominator of having a horse in it. So everything that we do involves a horse in one way, shape, or form. And so that's the thrust of our program.
Fantastic. So how many people do you have enrolled in the program or kind of coming and going at all times?
Well, we have we have a great number of people that, you know, receive services here, but in the course of a year, you know, I would say we're probably around, if you talk people that are coming on a regular weekly basis, there's probably somewhere around 500 people.
Wow. Wow. So this auction is probably your biggest fundraiser for the year.
It is. It's we do three fundraising events a year, and this is our largest one, and we really count on the proceeds for this. To help, you know, support the program and care for our horses. We have a herd of 28 horses out here, and they look like the original parade of breeds because we've got everything from very, very small minis to Norwegian Fjords, I guess, is our most popular breed. We have several thoroughbreds and a couple of draft horses because we serve so many different kinds of individuals, you know, in our military programs, for instance. You know, in that case, we need horses that can support predominance of adult male body weight. Whereas if we're doing, you know, a hippotherapy class, which is usually for very fragile small children, then we would be looking for ponies and something a little bit smaller. So, you know, the variety in our horse herd is there for the purpose of serving the clients and helping to best meet their needs. And, of course, all of our horses have to be bomb-proof. They've almost all had second or third careers. And, you know, some of the horses, you know, they just help in so many ways. One of the other things we have out here and part of the services we provide is we are a campus of the Fayette County Public School System. So we have 55 children that attend school here all day, every day, when school is in session.
How cool is that?
It is pretty cool. And one of their rotations is through the barn, where you can give some hands-on learning, you know, for children that aren't usually...
You didn't have that in Atlanta school district, did you, Jamie?
No, but all I heard when they get some hands-on experience is they clean stalls. By God,
You know what? Actually, sometimes they do that, but there's a lot more to it when you're talking about trying to meet the core academic requirements. You know,
they have to count the number of stalls they clean. That's
right. That's... or it could be maybe you're learning the lesson on angles, and you know, if you're going to measure the angle of a horse's
and volume,
shoulder, or,
you could do volume,
you know,
too.
There you go.
Yes.
How much and when we weigh the horses.
That's right.
You know, it's all, you know, hands on to some core academic standard, and it just is great to learn in a different way.
Well, Pat, it's been awesome having you on. Give the website again so people can go and see these auction items.
I sure will. It's www.ckrh.org.
CKRH.org. We'll post a link to that on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page. And no one is allowed to bid on the Easy Goer Sunday Silence Triple Crown print. That has to be mine.
Oh, there you go. Well, thank you for the support. And we really value your thinking of us and calling us today to spend some time on the radio show. It's really been nice. Thank you.
Hey, we'll see
Absolutely.
You, Pat.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you soon.
All righty.
Good luck.
Talk to you later. Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
They do a great job. It's a beautiful facility out there at the end of the horse park. It is really cool.
I want to go.
You have never seen the new building, have you?
No.
It's past the Thoroughbred Adoption Place out that road. So it's out toward the end, toward the highway. And it's really cool. And they have all the fields back there, too. So they have lots of turnout for other horses and stuff. It's a really neat building. It's set up for this purpose, you know, so it was designed for this. Well, speaking of really neat, Back on Track has some really terrific products. Let's hear about those. And then we're coming back and we're heading off to England to talk about wiring up some jockeys. Listeners have been asking why Back on Track products work and what is the science behind them. Well, they have evolved from a combination of ancient Chinese wisdom and modern science, as well as skilled textile production. This result is a polyester polypropylene fabric with a ceramic powder that's melted into the fabric's very own weave. The ceramic particles reflect body heat as an infrared wave, a form of energy with a highly documented pain-relieving effect. This reflected heat helps to ease inflammation, reduce muscle pain, and increase blood circulation. Back on Track products can be used to warm up your horse's muscles before exercise, thus reducing the risk of strains or injury. Most importantly, the product's dual capacity to prevent injury, as well as ease and expedite the recovery of already present injuries, is what makes Back on Track products so unique. I hope that helps as to why their products are so effective. Visit them at backontrackproducts.com. That's backontrackproducts.com.
Well, Glenn, do we have our next guest ready?
Yes, we do.
All right. We've got Dr. Thomas Vitti from the Royal Veterinary College on to talk with us about something really cool that is kind of going to revolutionize the racehorse world. And that that doesn't go lightly. Like, they don't want to revolutionize the racehorse world. So he's actually figured out a way to employ motion sensing technology in effort to identify the optimal riding position for jockeys. This is so cool. Hi, Dr. Vitti.
Hi, good afternoon.
Thank you so much for joining us. You're from the Royal Veterinary College. Where is that? And tell us about it. It sounds fancy.
So we are based just north of London in Hertfordshire. So we're not really close to the major racing centres, but we've been interested in the biomechanics of racehorses for quite a while. I work in a research group within the Royal Veterinary College called the Structure and Motion Lab, and we are really interested in how animals move and how they interact with their environment. And obviously one of the key things that we're interested in when we're talking about racehorses is their interaction with the jockey. And that's really where this work started.
So what made you decide to study this?
So it really started back in 2009 when the group did some work looking at the first bit of work, looking at jockey position and technique. There was some evidence coming out that showed that racing, the way the current technique that jockeys employ, the upright martini glass posture, gives real advantages in terms of performance to the racehorse. So let's go back a little bit and think about when the transition to the modern riding style happened. Back in the late 19th century, most jockeys were still using a very traditional riding style, sitting much like a dressage rider would, with an upright back. And gradually jockeys in America started experimenting and evolving the riding style a little bit and started to develop this upright martini glass style that's really what they use these days. And when we started looking at the racing times around that sort of era, we showed that the racing times improved by about 5 to 7% with that transition to the modern riding style. So that got us thinking a little bit about how significant jockey technique might be, what an impact that might have on the horse. And it really started us thinking about making some more measurements and starting to look into this in a little bit more detail.
The pictures that I see from back in the day, I guess, of jockeys is that they had their stirrups a lot longer. You're right. They sat up a lot higher. And I mean, to me, that doesn't look comfortable for the rider or the horse. Is that what evolved? Was it a comfort thing, or did it evolve because of the times?
I'm not sure exactly what the triggers were, but it seems to have been an intuitive evolution that actually makes mechanical sense when you think about it and when you look at it from a sort of physics perspective. Because essentially what the jockeys are doing by being upright in their posture and having their legs flexed as they are, they're actually decoupling themselves, so isolating their own body weight, if you like, from the mass of the horse. So although the horse still has to carry the weight of the jockey over the race course, because they're decoupled, they no longer have to lift the jockey up and down with every stride cycle. So although the horse itself is moving up and down with every stride cycle and has to do that in order to keep moving forward, because the jockey's decoupled, the horse is not having to lift the jockey up and down as well. So it saves the horse a little bit of effort. At the same time, of course, it makes the jockeys work a little bit harder, but it does save the horse that little bit of extra effort.
So how this is probably a dumb question, but how exactly are they bracing on their toes, jockeys? I mean, that's what it looks like.
Yeah, essentially, I'm no jockey, but we work very closely with the British Racing School in Newmarket, and we've obviously been working and looking at this area for a little while. And essentially, the very experienced jockeys are almost standing on tiptoes in the stirrups and balancing a little bit on their tiptoes. Although they do apply a little bit of pressure with their shins onto the side of the horse, they're really balancing on a very, very small surface area onto the stirrup itself. So there's a huge amount of skill involved and a huge amount of technique involved. And obviously, you know, that's one of the areas that we're interested in, is how jockeys learn this technique. Are there, are there differences between jockeys that may make a difference to the performance of the horse? And can we actually help with jockeys in terms of how they learn these techniques and how they can improve their own technique?
Now, you hooked him up at, when I saw the pictures that looked like, and everybody's seen the pictures of when they do movies with the body motion sensors, all the little sensors all over the body with all the wires coming out. That's kind of what it looked like. Is it the same technology as the motion picture people use?
It is pretty much exactly the same technology. So what we're talking about are wireless sensors, and they're based on accelerometers, much like you would find in a Wii handset or any device that actually in your mobile phone, any device that actually picks up movement. So these are matchbox size sensors without any external wires that measure the movement of each segment, body segment that they're attached to. So we have one on the shin, one on the thigh, one on the back, one on the chest, and then on the arms as well, and on the head. So every segment has a sensor, and so we can pick up the movement of every single segment. And you're absolutely right. It is exactly the same technology as is used for CGI in the movies and for creating characters in the movies, like Gollum, for example, in The Lord of the Rings. So it's exactly the same sort of technology.
Now, have you had any preliminary results yet?
We're just at the phase of starting our analysis. We combine that information with information coming from force sensors in the stirrups, so we know exactly how much force the jockeys are applying through their stirrups as well. And there are a couple of things that are coming up in our analysis that are interesting. And one of the things that we identified early as being particularly interesting is the symmetry of loading through the stirrups and whether or not that has an impact on the horse. It seems like there are differences between jockeys and differences particularly going up in skill level in how symmetrical they are in how they load the stirrups. And that we're still in the early days of the analysis, but that may be one of the key findings from the study. The other interesting aspect is the movement of the trunk. So you'll see when jockeys are in a flat out gallop, their back is essentially horizontal with the ground. And that the horizontal nature of the back is one of the things that we're picking up as being a little bit different between jockeys of experience levels. So, with training, jockeys seem to be able to be increasingly stable in that posture rather than actually pitching up, rather than actually sort of lifting up with every stride. They're maintaining that horizontal position a little bit more and giving a little bit more stability. And I think that probably will filter through as having an effect on the balance of the horse as well.
Now, when you did the test, were you using a horse on a track? As you said, the sensors are wireless. Were you using a horse on a track, or were they using a dummy of some sort?
We've been doing both. So our initial work, right in the early days of the study, we used a simulator. So the British Racing School, as I said, they have a couple of racehorse simulators there where they can they play videos of races in front of the jockey. So it's almost like a virtual reality setting.
That's cool.
And it's a very controlled environment for them to do their training in. And obviously it's ideal for us because we can do our early testing in that environment.
Can you have wrecks like in any other simulator? You turn the horse too hard and you wreck?
I don't know that they've got any of those sort of videos, but they're training their jockeys in all sorts of different settings. So they have,
well, that's really cool.
They're trained as to how to handle a fall. And, it's an amazing place and we're really lucky to be able to collaborate with them. But it's interesting the differences between the simulator and the real horse. Once we started comparing the two, there are some differences. They're interesting differences, and the significance of those differences will come out, I'm sure, in the data. Horses inherently are asymmetrical in the way they move, and of course they're not perfectly cyclical. They encounter there's an undulation in the terrain, and they're not perfectly symmetrical with every stride. So, those sort of features will be important as we go along as well.
Now, I was reading a little bit about the Royal Veterinary College, and you're the oldest veterinary college in the world, from what I read, 1791.
Yes, it is. So certainly the oldest veterinary college in the UK. I'm not sure it's necessarily the oldest veterinary college in the world. I think there may have been one in France before there was one in the UK, but certainly we're one of the oldest.
Wow. It just sounds like a cool place. I mean, it really does, with a lot of history.
Yeah, it's an amazing place to work, and we're very, very lucky with the facilities we have. The group I work in particular is just a fascinating place to work. We have people working on all sorts of animals, on cheetahs, on flight, on fish, on all sorts of species, and all that information comes together to give us different insights into the way animals move and the way they interact with their environment. So it's a great place to work. And I should probably add, our funding is, although the work is carried out at the Royal Veterinary College, we wouldn't be able to complete it without the funding source from the Horse Race Betting Levy Board. So we have to thank them as well for supporting our work.
And you guys are so different in the way all of that's organized as far as horse racing over there compared to over here. And it's really cool that some of that goes back to this kind of technology and to this kind of research. I think you do it a little bit better than we do when it comes to that. So more power to you to be able to.
Yeah, I'm not really in a position to be able to judge precisely between the US and the UK, but certainly we are incredibly lucky to have that as a source of funding for research, which is focused on the welfare of the horse at the end of the day. And it's, and enhancing the industry and giving back to the industry, and making sure that it's set up for the future. And, that's really what it's all about. So part of our work will be, what the impact is on the horse, but part of it is also how can we improve training for jockeys? How can we improve the industry as a whole?
Now, I've got a question on if you can improve something. Those of us in America have been super excited about the Ascot and California Chrome running. So if you can figure out a way to stop abscesses from happening immediately, I would appreciate it because I wanted to see him run in England today.
Yeah, that's a tough one, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, I was so excited about it. And do you go to the races? Let's get a little personal with you, because the sound quality is so good. And on Skype, a picture comes up with the person that we're talking to. And for our listeners, Dr. Vitti is hot. So I want to know, like, what, do you go to the races? Are you out there? Do you get all dressed up? Do you go into the little VIP section that they have?
We do occasionally. We're not in the major thoroughbred area of Newmarket, so it's a little tricky to get to the races when we want to, but we do go for sure. And obviously I work within the Royal Veterinary College. Actually, one thing I haven't mentioned is my primary role there is as a surgeon within the equine hospital. So we are working on the horses and we do see race horses come through, and so obviously some of those horses will go on to the races, and we do go along and support them at those times as well.
So he's a good looking veterinary surgeon with that accent. It's a total touchdown. Sorry.
We just had to bring the conversation down a little.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not involved in this, Dr. Vitti.
Asking if he's single right now, instant messaging me. So you can answer that if you want. But listen, it's been a pleasure having you on and talking to you about this. And I hope we get to keep up with everything and keep up with you and learn a little bit more about it as time goes on.
Absolutely. I'd love to keep you guys in the loop about how things develop. And hopefully next time I'll have a little bit more definitive news for you on some of the results.
Fantastic. Well, we've enjoyed talking to you, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Likewise. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Vitti. Well, that's cool. I did hear about California Chrome being on the sidelines in the injury box, and it's an abscess. Abscesses are just a pain because it doesn't matter whether you're a lower level, you have a backyard horse or whatever, your horse eventually is going to get an abscess.
You can be worth $1 million. He's won $6.3 million and he's sidelined due to a bruise.
I know.
And that's turned into an abscess. So kind of a bummer. He's been x-rayed. There's no major damage. Just, as we like to say, just a little bit of pus inside the hoof. It's actually what the Newmarket trainer Ray Guest said. It's just a minor thing. Very disappointing, as they went on to say. And Sherman earlier said, he probably got it from galloping around these hills. He's a little salty.
Yeah, horses in America never get abscesses.
No, we don't get abscesses at all, ever. No.
So I'm reading all these, on California Chrome's Facebook page and all this. Somebody's like, that's karma for them sending him over to England. And it happened here. And I thought it would be great if he was at the Ascot representing the United States. So I'm super disappointed because the race was going to be today. Ugh.
Hey, they're honoring another horse over there, though, aren't they? The Queen was involved yesterday.
Well, I guess the Briar horse wasn't enough, because I do have Frankel as a Briar, but they unveiled a bronze statue of Frankel, and the Queen is the one who did it. It was yesterday at the Royal Ascot. Frankel, of course, won 14 races, retired after his last one, and is standing at stud. I have always contended he should be bred to either Zenyatta or Black Caviar. He's an amazing horse, and it was really cool that I just love the queen. I do. I just think she's fabulous. And she shows up and she's the one who unveils the statue. And it just really brings it all to a point that they're I guess he won 5 of his races at that course. So they wanted to honor him. And it's really beautiful. It's not as like, it's kind of one of those clay looking ones as opposed to the Zenyatta statue that's at Santa Anita. It's a little different looking.
Yeah, you're right. It is. It looked like it was just carved out of clay, and they plunked it up there rather than being all smooth and shiny, like the Zenyatta one is.
Yeah, it is. It's beautiful. Hey, Lucas is here.
I have
Lucas.
Never seen the queen in the same outfit twice. How big do you think her closet is?
Well, you know, she gets all these clothes. It's different every time. And then they do articles about the princess, you know, the mother of, the princess.
Kate, they
actually celebrate her because she recycles outfits. That's like, Kate wore that again. Isn't she great? Of course. Why wouldn't you wear clothes twice? But they don't. They just wear them and.
I don't know what happens to him. I'm just picturing the queen having a closet that's like a mile long.
Yeah.
It has one of those push button things and like at the dry cleaners, and the clothes just come around on the thing. And, you know,
probably what happens is she wakes up and there's an outfit sitting there you'll wear this one from 9 to noon. You'll wear this one.
Yeah,
from
I'm sure that's how it is. But do you think they keep track of them, put little tags on it, worn once on January 20th, 1920. And it has little tags on the date it was worn and the event it was worn to, so that it's never, you know, recycled wrongly.
Talk about a fundraiser. If they would have saved all her outfits, you could sell them. You could, I don't know what.
Why
you
Why isn't Victoria in on this conversation? We should have had her in this conversation.
We'll talk to her in a minute.
All right, let's hear, let's take a break for a song. And today I have a little Born to Run by Templeton Thompson. And then we'll be back with Victoria all the way again from England. 2 of them from England. By the way, his sound was great. We have better sound than we do.
And he did not appreciate my subjecting him to a little bit of.
No, he did not. There was also a lot of quiet silence going on.
Yeah, that's why I didn't keep it going. But dude, that guy is way hot. Woo! His
Maybe
little picture came up
picture.
And I'm like, I gotta Google him. So then I Googled him and I Google imaged him. Oh dear God.
And you were getting messages on Facebook from our listeners who about had the same mentality as you, going, is he married?
Yeah, they were all like, is he single? He's in England.
Because that's the quality programming we do here in America.
Well, you got to add a little excitement to it. And I've gotten in trouble from listeners before not asking and not saying those things, because it's very me to do that. And they're like, why haven't you been? You know, there's some of us out here that are single. So I really felt like objectifying
I'm
that.
I'm a guy. He was acting like this was below him, but we all are flattered when something like that happens. So.
Thanks. Making me feel better.
You're welcome.
He's going to be like, never go on that show ever.
Again.
Well, I never did crawl and I never did toe the line. No man is master than me. Just put on my traveling shoes. If you want to win, you just can't lose the time or stay behind. Well, I was born to run, to get ahead of the rest. And all that I wanted was to be the best, just to feel free and be someone. Just to feel free.
Templeton Thompson with Born to Run. You can find all of Templeton's music at templetonthompson.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I'm Glenda Geek here with Jamie Jennings, and Coach Jen is in the producer chair. We thank you for joining us today. We are brought to you by Back on Track Products at backontrackproducts.com. And I wanted to mention, too, that we talked about another product on the driving radio show that will be coming out today, Dr. Wendy and I, and we had a referral from a listener, and the listener said, you have to check out this product. It's like a Fitbit for horses. And we had the owner of the company on, who, by the way, is about just out of college and started her own technology company, and I was just so impressed. And she was very good at explaining it, and you'll find out whether Dr. Wendy approved of this product and thought it was a good idea or not, or whether it would work or not, but it tracks your horse's heart rate and respiration, everything, while you're on board, while you're doing your training. So we had her on. You have to take a listen to the driving radio show to find out more about that. I'm back. Yep, that's good.
Sorry.
We talked a little bit, last week, about an auction that was going on over the weekend at Dinwiddie Lampton's farm, in an 82-acre farm in Kentucky, right outside of Lexington. Jennifer and I had been there for the auction of the carriages and everything, all of his equipment and everything, when he died and the auction went on. And it was a beautiful place, and it had an old veterinary building there with the surgery rooms and everything. The carriage house was beautiful, wood-lined carriage house. It was just gorgeous. And it had an older type of home that reminded you of just a large farmhouse. And that went up to auction over the weekend for $2.1 million. So that was for the Colonial House, the 46 stalls, 4 barns, 82 acres. Did not seem bad, actually, for that area, especially there in Lexington.
It was cheap, $2.1 million piece of cake, so cheap.
Now, do you realize that Fayette County, where Lexington resides in Kentucky, has one of the highest property taxes in the country?
Really?
Yes.
Wow, why?
I don't know. That's what we said, too, when we were looking at moving there the first time 20 years ago and buying a place there. They have one of the highest property taxes in the country in Fayette County. Yep. There's a reason it can be all nice and pretty.
Well, I guess they think, well, the people that live here have money, so we might as well charge them.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And, you know, we were talking about racehorses earlier. Well, a sad day in Louisville, Kentucky, and that is a racehorse, the fastest harness horse in the world, died. And this is a horse's name was Cam Best. He died at Walnut Hill at a Lexington farm, actually, where he spent more than 20 years at his leisure. He had a nice retirement. He had a 4-year racing career. He died when he was 27 of apparent heart attack. They just found him in the field. He was apparently walking along, and he just died of a heart attack.
Well, that's the way to go.
I know.
Right there.
In retirement in a beautiful field in Lexington, and been that way for 20 years. He had won, has been responsible for offspring that has won $134 million. So he did pretty well as a papa. He was the fastest standard bred in history when he placed the 1 mile in 46.20 seconds, and that was at the Illinois State Fair in Springfield in 1993, and nobody has beat that yet. So congratulations to him, and you know what a great legacy to leave a bunch of offspring winning $134 million.
So he produced really nice horses too. So
yes.
So many of the standard bred lineages, and I think it happens in thoroughbreds too. The amazing racehorses, but not necessarily lovely to work with. A lot of Cam Best's kids were just nice horses.
And he certainly has learned to say your name now. I remember a year you complaining that he had not learned to say your name. Are you tired of that yet?
Oh my God! Have you guys seen on TBS that commercial where it's Stewie Griffin from Family Guy, and he's at the edge of his mom's bed, and he's going, "Mom, mom, mom, mama, mama."
Yes.
Mama. That's for real. That is so true. That happens. It's insane.
Well, we One other story here I wanted to mention was that, and we talk about this every year, it's the 155th anniversary of the founding of the Pony Express, and they're doing the annual Pony Express ride. The National Pony Express Association is conducting it. The first rider departs is St. Joseph, Missouri on June the 15th at 10 a.m., and the last rider will arrive on June the 25th. It's a 10-day thing, and they'll exchange riders all the way along like they would have during the Pony Express. And so they go through Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and Nevada, and it ends in California. So they do 8 states in all, and they just change riders the whole way through. And they have this packet that they carry, and they actually do carry letters. There's some kind of lottery system where you can get your letter, and it actually has a postage stamp on it from Missouri, where they leave from, and then it arrives in Sacramento, and then you can get the letter and have it as a keepsake. So I don't know how they do that system anymore. I think it was kind of a lottery whether you were in on that or not. But they do exchange the old Pony Express bag from one horse to another all the way along the route. Isn't it cool?
That is.
So they still do that, and it's apparently pretty treacherous. I'll tell you, somebody who's ridden the entire route is Karen, who does our Endurance Day episode every month. She has ridden the entire Pony Express route from one end to the other. She's done some amazing long rides. And you know, that involves camping, and that's just, I'm out.
You mean there's no living quarters trailer to go with it?
No. I'm out. When you have to pack your own food and all that, forget it. I'm just, no hotel or shower. Just out.
No, we're done.
All right, let's head back to England.
Now it's time for the European Report with Horse and Country TV.
And now we get to head back to England. We say that because we just got off the phone, Victoria, with Dr. Thomas Vitti from the Royal Veterinary College. Mama. Are you familiar with Dr. Vitti? Stop yelling at me.
Somebody's getting very excited by this.
Yes.
I'm aware of the Royal Veterinary College, of course, but no, I haven't met him, I'm afraid.
Oh my God, he's hot. You need to go look it up.
That's not what I expected. I thought you were going to say he was an absolute expert and I had to go and listen to what he says. But no, he's hot, so I have to.
Okay. It's Google. It's Vitte. Oh my gosh! You need to get your horses up there. He's also a surgeon, so you may want to go get involved in that. Hey, and we also just did a story about Frankel and the statue being unveiled at Royal Ascot. Were you there?
I'm going tomorrow, but I wasn't there yesterday. I'm watching at home today.
You didn't see the Queen unveil the statue. You missed it.
The thing is about Frankel is he's so recognizable because of his white star. And when he doesn't have that, it's quite hard to tell which horse it is.
Oh, they didn't put the star on it because... stop. Go take that. Drop. I'm sorry, you guys. So the Zenyatta statue that they have at Santa Anita, actually, they put a blaze on her, even though it's a... whatever that metal is. So there's no star for Frankel on his statue?
Well, I didn't think so in the pictures that I saw, but maybe I'll go and have a look tomorrow if I get a chance, and I'll and maybe I could take some like white paint and paint a star on.
There we go.
I need you to take
that'll
a
go
Frankel
well.
Selfie. Yeah.
I'll be getting a call for bail money from England.
Yeah, I need a Frankel selfie though. At least do that.
Okay, I'll try my best.
Okay, sounds good. Well, hey, what's going on over there at Horse and Country TV?
Well, we've got some interesting news stories this week, including one about Nicola Wilson, who I don't know if you guys are familiar with her. She's a Team GB event rider, and she was most famous for her partnership with Opposition Buzz, who was the craziest cross-country horse, and he would clear fences with about 3 foot to spare every time, even huge big badminton fences. And we lost him last year, sadly. He was in his late teens, and he retired, and soon after Nicola lost him. So it's really great to see her back at the top, and she's just won a big CIC 3-star event here in the UK called Bramham.
And I remember seeing videos of that horse jumping, and you're right, it was over jumping everything.
Yeah, he wasted. He was known as a maverick, and he was such a Team GB stalwart because he was such a great jumper, although his dressage was never quite as good as it needed to be to win a four-star. So it's really nice to see Nicola's got these a good string of up-and-coming horses, including this one, who is definitely one to watch.
I always figured he just didn't like hitting his knees on anything. He didn't like pain, so he was going to make sure he cleared it.
I think they've said that it's a stallion that he throws these horses that jump in this exuberant style, and luckily opposition Buzz was able to kind of adapt and make it work, but I think some of them maybe aren't as successful at that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about colored horses less likely to be hit on the roads. What are you talking about there? That was kind of a strange story.
Maybe I should have put a disclaimer on this story for you guys, because colored horses is paint horses, like black and white or brown and white. So we call them colored.
Okay.
I don't know why. It sounds a bit wrong, doesn't it? You have to watch what you say in the horse world. But colored refers to skewbald or piebald. And apparently if you're riding a skewbald or piebald or a paint horse, as you would call them, you're less likely to get hit on the road.
That's what the whole story was about?
Yes, indeed.
So your colorful horse will be less likely to get hit than if you're riding your boring brown one.
Indeed. And maybe they think it's because it's like a cow that's on the road or somebody riding a cow. And so they slow down. But I don't know.
I could have done, you know, we do a section once a month, a segment once a month on, and I just go through Google and I put study show in my Google search. And I do the headlines of what stupid studies people have done. And everyone we go, they spent money for that. So I'm going to do it here. They spent money for that.
Indeed, they did. Indeed, and I have a theory that like paint horses over here tend to be a bit sort of thicker set, they're a bit cobby, whereas thoroughbreds, who are more likely to be bay or chestnut, they'll be more likely to jump around all over the road. So maybe it's not that the drivers see them; maybe they're just behaving
safer.
Yeah. Indeed.
They're better rides. That's funny.
Indeed.
All right. Now I got this one. This one also threw me for a loop when I read the headline, too. It's the RAF. Now, the RAF is your Royal Air Force, correct?
Yes, indeed.
All right. So and of course, Jamie, you know, her husband, you know, is a fighter pilot working for the Air Force. So now, you know, when I read this thing, and let me read the title, RAF launches high-vis clothing campaign. And I went, they want everybody to be in high-vis clothing so they're easier targets. You know, that's the first thing I thought of. Well, I'll be able to bomb them easier if they're all wearing high-vis clothing.
No, they want to be able to see you at a distance to make sure that they don't fly too low and frighten horses. And I think maybe some people, when they're off-road hacking, don't bother to wear fluorescent clothing, and because they don't worry about cars on the road, but actually they do need to worry about planes overhead. And I've been riding an off-the-track thoroughbred when a fighter plane has gone over really close above me when I was in some woods. And luckily my horse just kind of shook for a second and then just carried on, because that could have been quite dangerous.
Now, does there are height limits. You can't fly below a certain height here in the United States. I think it's 1,000 feet. But that's still pretty low for a fighter, right, Jamie?
Well, they have to land. I mean, you know, I live underneath the Air Force Base, too, and it definitely freaks the horses out at the beginning, but then they get used to it. But I would imagine having a horse in out of their home area where they don't see it all the time, that would definitely be a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there's quite an interesting video as well when they talk a little bit to Jenny Riddle, the guys from the RAF, about this campaign and why they're doing it. So it's definitely worth a watch to find out why it's important over here.
Well, I'm glad to see it wasn't just so you'd have a better target to bomb. I'm glad to see that. I was happy that they came out to a different conclusion. Although I got to believe if Chad's out there in his fighter jet and they're doing war games, he's not really paying attention to what's riding around on the ground.
He tells me that because every once in a while he'll fly over our house to land. And I'm like, did you see me? I was out riding. And he's like, I flew by you at 250 miles an hour. Sorry, didn't see you.
They are loud, though, those jets. They are super loud. Well, now the Royal Windsor, obviously, is something that you guys cover, and you have a video up of the Hack Championship. What is that?
So a show hack is a type of horse that's originally designed for the ladies to ride in Victorian times, and so they have to be very beautifully behaved, and they tend to be very elegant and lightweight. And so Jenny is watching a show hack class with a top producer, and she talks a little bit about what to look for. But just go and check it out, because they're so beautiful. They are the most beautiful of show horses, the finest and most elegant. So it's nice to see them.
And they're always, they're, the guys are like wearing the top hats and all of that.
Yes, they do. I mean, it depends if it's championship or what time of day it is. It's all very complicated. But yes, they tend to wear like their suits instead of tweed jackets and things. So it's very cool. And the ladies all look very elegant too.
Have you I wanted to ask you this last time you were on. Do they have side saddle classes at these big shows?
Yes, they do. They have Ladies Hunter, which is side saddle, and then they have special side saddle where they do like Conquerors d'Elegance, and they dress up in traditional clothing and stuff like that. So yes, it's quite a big thing.
Have you ever tried it?
I haven't. So I've written about it, I've gone to film it, but I've never sat in it myself. So I quite like riding astride. I'm happy doing that.
You're happy having a leg on each side. Well, the other thing that was really cool, because I like history stuff, and we were talking about General Patton, and he was in the Olympics in 1912. We were talking about that today. And then you had on horseandcountry.tv, you had a From the Archives, which is a video of the Dublin Horse Show in 1939, which is before, so we're talking before World War II, or just at the beginning of when that all started.
Indeed. So we had one from Badminton in 1965 a few weeks ago. And so this is now even older. And it's just incredible to see such big crowds. It's really popular. And they do a ridiculous thing called a wall jumping competition where they just gallop up to this brick wall and half the horses hit it. And none of the riders have got hard hats and stuff. It's all absolutely crazy. And then they have the Aga Khan Trophy, which is like now given to the winning Nations Cup team, which so now it's kind of top class show jumping, but in those days we were just jumping banks and gates, and it's quite crazy.
Well, this wall, I'm watching the video now, and they're jumping this wall in their, by the way, in their suits and their top hats, and they're jumping this wall, and you know how walls that we do now, we put like flowers on top or something soft? They piled rocks on top of this wall, so they're jumping this wall piled with rocks.
Yeah, and, it's not very healthy.
Half of them are landing on the neck, and it's like, oh my god. It's incredible.
Oh my gosh, I'm watching it now. Good lord.
These people were crazy. But then again, they were all fox hunters back then, and they were jumping crap like this all the time, right?
Yeah, but like one horse chips in and lands and trots away. That's like a 5-foot stone wall. Oh, that guy fell off.
This old footage is incredible. Hey, have you, Victoria, I found this the other day. It was New York City, and I posted it. Have you ever seen the old videos like from London or New York City or one of the big cities in the early 1900s? I mean, like 1900 to 1910. It is unbelievable. There are thousands of horses in the streets. There doesn't seem to be any rules on whether you go on the right or the left. They're all just weaving in and out of each other. It's just unfreaking believable to watch those videos.
I haven't, but it sounds good. I should go and check it out.
Oh, you should check it out. They're on YouTube. It is just craziness. I mean, just we talk about our horses. You know, our horses freak out when they see another horse. There are thousands of horses all driving and weaving and bobbing in and out. And people are running across the street trying to not get hit. It's just bizarre. It's just something. You don't see that in the movies. The way it really was back then. And then the first thing, the only thing I could think of was how smelly it had to be. Ugh. Had to be incredibly smelly.
Indeed. I'm not sure how many street sweepers they had back in those days.
Very good. Well, thank you, Victoria. It's horseandcountry.tv. Now, when do you leave? Where are you going and when do you leave?
I went away on holiday and I got back on Monday night. So I've gone. And then I'm off to Hickstead next week.
And I saw that you were away in Spain, right? And it just rained on you the entire time?
We got one day of sunshine when we got to go to the beach. So, but it was a very green place. I did think it was a good place to have horses, whereas southern Spain is more like a dust bowl. So I guess I should have expected it to rain the minute we arrived and we're surrounded by green fields.
Well, you were used to it, right? You get a lot of rain in England, so
we do. But
you felt like home.
Because of that, when you go anywhere abroad, even just it was like last year when I went to the World Equestrian Games, and I was like, "Oh, I'm going to spend 2 weeks in France," and I packed sundresses, and it was absolutely freezing. So as soon as I go abroad, I expect it to be hot, and I'm very disappointed when it's not.
Went to Bermuda on vacation for a week one time, and it rained the entire time we were there. We couldn't go to the beach because the wind was so hard, the sand hurt. We spent an entire week in Bermuda in the hotel and never really got out of the hotel because it rained the entire week. And they said, well, we get rain 5 days a year. Yep, the 5 days we were there.
You wondered why your hotel room was so cheap. It's like a discount.
It was that week. Thank you, Victoria.
My pleasure.
All right, take care. Horseandcountry.tv is where you'll find all the great videos that we were just talking about, and check them out. You know who else? I don't know if you noticed. I know you follow her on Facebook, but Emily, who does our jumping show once a month, has been over.
Where is she?
She's in Europe somewhere horse shopping. She's been country hopping and horse shopping all over Europe and posting pictures. I was figuring that was kind of making you jealous.
Oh my gosh, and she's just riding horse after horse, jumping 5-foot fences. And the one she posted this morning is just incredible. This horse is just amazing. Like Hunter Hack Canter around these 5-foot fences.
Yeah.
Just awesome.
I know. It looks like she's having a blast, and I'm sure she'll tell us about it on our next episode. She always joins us. I think it's the first... It's the first Tuesday of every month, so when she comes back in July, I'm sure she'll be telling us about that. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we wrap it up? I have some more shows to do today, and we appreciate everybody being here. Don't forget to get your ads in for Really Bad Ads. Send them to jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. I can't tell you how many people are still sending them to me, but all I do is forward them to Jennifer. So send them to jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. And if Jennifer Palm's mom, Pat, is listening, her email address is jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. She also keeps putting the wrong thing. She put Coach Jen at horseradionetwork.com last time. So it's Jennifer, that's with two N's, one I, one E, jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. Put Really Bad Ads in the subject line and copy and paste the entire ad into the email. Don't just put the link, because that won't help. And I know that's hard to do when you're on your phone. I get that. But maybe do it from your computer at home. That's just the best way to do it.
Do you know what's amazing is how much I let my child get away with while I'm trying to talk to you guys?
What is he doing now?
Well, at some point he took a marker and ran, and I'm like, oh, it's washable. And then he's pulled off. I have bookshelves in here, and he's pulled. Don't eat the cat food. Okay. So he's pulled off all the books off the bookshelf and thrown them on the floor. Now he's over where the cat eats. So, you know, no big deal. He drew on my leg while I'm talking.
Well, you know, we've had a pretty good run there since your husband has been gone. He has slept through most of the shows.
I know. I need to get – it's that time of year where the sun is coming in really, really early. It starts to get light at like 4:45 here. It's crazy. So he is not sleeping. I need blackout curtains. Better blackout curtains.
Well, if you could hold on for 2 seconds till after the show, I just want to ask you about my plan for visiting real quick.
I'm busy. Out of town. You don't need to ask.
See everybody. We'll be back tomorrow with the trail riding episode with the NATRC.